This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
What happens when, you know, the world's two biggest superpowers try to lock down the most advanced technology in history?
Right. It behaves like water.
Exactly. It finds the path of least resistance and, I mean, in the process, it completely rewires the global economy.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are opening up a massive, freshly translated tech briefing from July 2, 2026 to show you exactly how that is happening on the ground in real time.
Yeah, we are basically looking at a masterclass in unintended consequences today. Because when you try to build a wall across a Russian current of innovation, that current doesn't just stop.
No, it routes around the barrier.
It routes around and usually it picks up incredible speed along the way.
To understand how that current is moving, our mission for you today is to navigate this wild collision between software, hardware, geopolitics, and get this physical walking around robots.
Yeah, it's a lot. It is. And to do that, we are leaning heavily on a fascinating briefing put together by lawyer Kyungjin Kim. His insights provide this really incredible window into the structural shifts happening right now across China, the U.S., and South Korea.
But before we go any further, we really should state something explicitly to you, the listener. The sources we are unpacking today contain some heavily politically charged maneuvers.
Definitely.
So we are not here to take sides, and we certainly aren't endorsing any specific political viewpoints or, you know, national strategies. Our role is strictly to act as impartial guides to the facts, the data, and the market maneuvers that are laid out in this briefing.
Right. We're just looking at the board. So let's jump into the deep end. The briefing highlights a recent action by the U.S. Commerce Department involving Anthropic, the AI company behind the Fable and Mythos models.
Yeah, the Fable 5 and Mythos 5 ban.
Right. I saw the headline that the U.S. banned the export of those two models for 18 days because I think it was an Amazon research report that found a jailbreak vulnerability. And I think most people know a jailbreak is just a clever prompt that tricks an AI into bypassing its own safety filters.
Like getting it to write a phishing email or something.
Exactly. But a temporary 18-day pause seems like, I don't know, a minor speed bump. Why did this become such a massive paradox?
Well, 18 days sounds like a blip in normal industries. But in the artificial intelligence sector, 18 days is a lifetime.
I mean,
because things move so fast?
Because they move incredibly fast. When the Commerce Department saw this vulnerability, they viewed it through a really strict national security lens and just slammed the door shut on foreign access. But Anthropic pushed back immediately, pointing out a rather glaring double standard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They noted that OpenAI's GPT 5.5 and even China's own Kimi K2.7 model had the exact same vulnerability, but neither of those faced similar restrictions. Okay, wait, let's unpack this with an analogy, because to me, this export control feels essentially like building a dam across a river, only to realize you just built a highly efficient irrigation system for your competitor's farm.
That is, honestly, that's the perfect way to visualize it. And CNBC actually released an analysis calling this specific Trump administration AI crackdown an absolute gift to China.
A gift. Wow.
Yeah. Think about it from the perspective of an international software developer. You have an application running on Anthropic's Fable 5. Suddenly, the U.S. government just cuts your access. You don't just put your business on hold for 3 weeks.
No, of course not. You'd lose all your users.
Exactly. You scramble to rewrite your software pipeline to use whatever alternative is actually available.
And nature abhors a vacuum. So they went shopping and the Chinese open source models just surged in to fill that void.
Well, specifically Chinese open weight models. And this is a really crucial distinction.
Open weight versus open source.
Yeah. Open source usually means the entire code is public. Open weight means the underlying mathematical parameters, you know, the weights that actually make the AI smart, are freely available for developers to download, modify, and run on their own servers.
Ah, so they aren't relying on a locked-down American API.
Precisely. And during those 18 days, these Chinese open weight models hit a 61% token share on OpenRouter.
Wait, let's pause there for a second. What is OpenRouter and why does the 61% token share actually matter?
Okay, so OpenRouter is essentially a massive marketplace for developers. Instead of committing to just one AI model, a developer can send their tokens through OpenRouter, which then automatically routes it to the cheapest or most efficient model available at that very second.
Oh, that's smart.
It is. So grabbing 61% of the volume on that platform means that a supermajority of global developer traffic suddenly shifted to Chinese architecture.
And the briefing notes that during this window, Zipu AI's GLM 5.2 model closed the performance gap on agentic benchmarks, with Anthropic's Opus 4.8 to just a 1% difference.
Just 1%.
I want to clarify agentic benchmarks for a second, because we aren't just talking about chatbots answering trivia anymore. Agentic means the AI acts as an autonomous agent. Like, it can break down a complex task, surf the web, write its own code, and test that code without a human holding its hand.
Right, it's doing the actual heavy lifting.
And Zipu AI got within 1% of the best American model on that front. But here's the real kicker. They're doing it at 1/5 the cost.
Which is just, I mean, that cost differential completely disrupts the market. American tech executives are now openly worrying that by locking up domestic models, the U.S. government inadvertently handed Chinese developers the two things they desperately needed.
Which are?
Massive market share and a tidal wave of real-world user data to stress test and refine their models. Once a developer rewrites their pipeline to use a Chinese model that costs 80% less, they aren't switching back just because an 18-day ban expired.
That makes total sense. So this surge in adoption wasn't just about availability then. It was fueled by an incredibly brutal 18-month price war where Chinese companies were, like, practically giving intelligence away.
Basically, yeah.
But as former lawmaker Kingjin Kim points out in the briefing, that era of dirt cheap AI is suddenly hitting a massive brick wall. The honeymoon phase is over.
It really is. We are seeing a fundamental shift in how computing power is commoditized, and it's being led by a company called DeepSeek.
Right.
They are launching the official version of their V4 model in mid-July. And they are rolling out something the industry really hasn't seen before. It's a peak and valley API pricing model.
I found this detail so fascinating. Hmm? During peak hours in Beijing, which they define as 9 a.m. to noon, and then 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., the price to use their AI literally doubles.
Yep. It goes from 6 yuan to 12 yuan per million tokens.
Wait, so the golden age of unlimited cheap AI for developers is already over. Are we effectively treating artificial intelligence the same way we treat running the dishwasher at night to save on our power bill?
It is the exact same economic principle. DigiTimes actually analyzed this rollout and noted it is the definitive signal that the Chinese LLM price war is dead.
Wow.
Yeah, we have officially shifted from a war of pure customer acquisition into a computing efficiency competition. Because the reality is, the price war over the last year and a half saw API costs drop by 90%, but you simply cannot defy physics.
Because AI isn't just software living in the ether, it requires actual physical hardware.
Massive amounts of it. The sheer shortage of GPUs, you know, the physical silicon chips required to run these models, combined with the immense electricity that data centers consume, has forced the market to bottom out.
Yeah, you can't price a service at zero when the physical machine running it costs tens of thousands of dollars.
And requires its own dedicated cooling infrastructure, right? Former lawmaker Kunjin Kim makes a crucial observation here that AI has officially transitioned into a public utility. Intelligence is now a metered resource, just like water or electricity.
Though I will say, there is a fun little geographical loophole here for developers outside of China.
Oh. The time zone thing.
Yeah. Because the peak pricing is based on Beijing business hours, U.S. developers can actually use the cheaper off-peak rates during their normal daytime working hours in New York or San Francisco.
Wait, it's a nice arbitrage opportunity for Western developers.
Yeah.
But, you know, the macro trend is undeniable. The reason AI is being priced like electricity is because the actual hardware and power costs to run these data centers are just exploding.
Exploding.
And that brings us to the massive ripple effects hitting global manufacturing and international diplomacy.
Let's follow that thread to the hardware squeeze. The briefing shows that on July 1st, there were synchronized price hikes across roughly 20 global semiconductor companies.
Including giants like Infineon, Texas Instruments, and Xilinx.
Exactly. And the biggest jump wasn't in chips for smartphones or laptops. The 15 to 25% price increases were specifically in power chips dedicated to AI servers and data centers. What is driving that specific spike?
It is the sheer unadulterated power demand of these facilities. Mm-hmm. AI data centers run incredibly hot, like physically hot. They require massive liquid cooling systems and specialized power management chips just to keep the servers from melting down under the mathematical load. So as raw material costs rise and data center construction goes into overdrive globally, the demand for these specific power-regulating chips is fundamentally altering the semiconductor pricing structure.
And it's also changing who gets to manufacture what, isn't it?
Yeah.
TSMC, the Taiwanese semiconductor giant, is so focused on building the bleeding-edge chips that their older technology is overflowing.
Yep.
The industry calls these mature nodes. But what exactly constitutes a mature node, and where are all those unfulfilled orders actually going?
So a mature node refers to older generations of chip manufacturing technology. Think of the chips that manage power in a car or a refrigerator, rather than the ultra-dense brains of a supercomputer.
Okay, got it.
Because TSMC is dedicating all its factory space to the newest, most advanced stuff, orders for mature nodes are trickling down to Chinese foundries. A major Chinese manufacturer like SMIC is currently sitting at a 93.1% utilization rate.
93.1%? That's almost completely maxed out.
Yeah, they are running their factories at absolute maximum capacity to catch this overflow.
But SMIC isn't just settling for mature nodes, right? The briefing notes they plan to double their 7-nanometer production capacity this year. Why does that specific metric 7-nanometer matter so much?
The nanometer measurement refers to the microscopic size of the transistors on a chip. The smaller the transistor, the more you can pack into a single space.
Which means vastly more processing power.
And better energy efficiency. 7 nanometers is essentially the baseline architecture you absolutely need to run advanced AI efficiently. If SMIC can successfully double their 7-nanometer capacity, they could largely solve the AI chip bottleneck for Chinese tech giants like Huawei.
Wow. Which would create a domestic supply chain that completely bypasses Western export controls.
Exactly. Which sets up a highly precarious geopolitical tightrope, particularly for countries caught in the middle. The briefing highlights a glaring disconnect with South Korea.
Right, because just recently, Washington, D.C. hosted the PAXILICA SECMA Summit. 35 countries signed an AI opportunity declaration, and South Korea's vice foreign minister was prominently in attendance. On paper, it looks like a unified U.S.-led alliance.
On paper, sure. But the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, released a report pointing out a massive loophole in this united front. South Korea is not implementing export controls equivalent to the U.S. Foreign Direct Product Rule, commonly known as FDPR.
We should define FDPR because it sounds like, you know, bureaucratic jargon, but it's actually a massively powerful tool for the U.S. government.
It is incredibly powerful. The FDPR is an extraterritorial rule. It basically states that if a product is manufactured anywhere in the world, but it relies on a certain amount of American software or technology in its design process, the U.S. government can dictate where that final product gets exported.
So if a company in Seoul uses American software to design a semiconductor, the U.S. claims jurisdiction over whether they can sell that chip to Beijing.
Exactly. And South Korea hasn't matched that level of control. In fact, the data in the briefing shows that in May, South Korea's semiconductor exports to China surged by 243% year over year.
243%. So the obvious question for the listener here is, how long can a country actually maintain a diplomatic yes on paper at a summit in Washington while their economy is doing a 243% sprint in the absolute opposite direction?
Yeah, and former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim's commentary focuses heavily on how uncomfortable this double position is for South Korea.
I can imagine.
You are attempting to participate in U.S.-led supply chain summits while your domestic tech sector is actively filling this massive demand across the LOC. It is a major stress test for global trade alliances, and it really shows how economic reality often just outpaces diplomatic agreements.
And, you know, this capital isn't just flowing into server farms anymore. The rules for the STAR Market in Shanghai, which is basically China's version of the NASDAQ, were recently relaxed to help AI companies go public even if they aren't profitable yet.
Right. They just need a valuation of around $590 million and government recognition of their core tech.
So massive IPO funding is being unlocked, computing power is scaling, and the result is that all this AI we've been talking about is literally getting up and walking around.
We are officially crossing the threshold into embodied AI. The humanoid robot boom is moving out of the research lab and into consumer retail.
This part is wild. On June 30th in Shenzhen, a company called UbiTech officially launched the UWorld U1 series. This is a consumer-grade humanoid robot starting at 119,800 yuan, which converts to roughly 16,500 US dollars.
Which is incredible.
A fully articulated humanoid robot for the price of a used Honda Civic. They took over 13,361 orders on day one alone.
And the physical specifications on the U1 show just how rapidly the hardware is catching up to the software. It has 88 degrees of freedom, meaning its joints and limbs can articulate in highly complex, fluid ways. This is crazy. It features a bio-inspired cervical spine for realistic head movement.
Okay, I have to ask about that spine. Why invest so much engineering into a bio-inspired neck? Does a robot really need realistic cervical vertebrae to, like, fold your laundry?
Well, no, it doesn't need it for laundry. But it absolutely needs it to cross the uncanny valley.
Ah.
UbiTech isn't just pitching a warehouse worker here. They're pitching interaction. The robot has over 20 different emotion recognition capabilities. They are even donating 100 customized units specifically for psychological support, utilizing 3D facial reconstruction and voice cloning to simulate specific individuals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If a machine is going to provide emotional support, stiff robotic head movements just break the illusion that it has to move intuitively.
And the financial sector is taking this incredibly seriously. Morgan Stanley looked at this momentum and completely tore up their previous projections. They doubled their 2026 forecast for China's humanoid shipment numbers, jumping from an original 14,000 units up to 50,000.
When projecting a $15 billion market by 2030.
It's moving so fast. We are also seeing this rapid scaling in AI content generation, right? ByteDance is launching Cadence 2.5, which generates native 30-second 4K video seamlessly, pulling from up to 50 reference materials at once.
Yeah, and they're pushing that video generation capability forward despite ongoing copyright disputes in Hollywood that actually halted their previous 2.0 version.
Right.
The capacity to generate synthetic reality, whether that's on a screen or in a physical robot, is scaling at breakneck speed.
Okay, but I want to present a reality check here on the humanoid hype, because there's a detail from CNN in the briefing about the Chinese robot rental market.
Oh, the Sharebot rentals.
Yeah. There's a subsidiary renting out humanoids for about 3,500 yuan or $500 a day, but the fine print is crucial. That rental fee currently still requires a human operator. The robot needs a human in the loop.
Right.
So we have a $16,000 robot with an artificial spine and emotion recognition, but right now a rental still requires a human driver. Are we looking at actual autonomous robots or just highly expensive remote-controlled avatars for the time being?
That is a highly necessary reality check. The CNN analysis concluded that true autonomous replacement of human labor in complex environments is still years away. Right now, many of these robots are functioning as highly advanced telepresence avatars.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the critical takeaway from the briefing is the trajectory. The hardware is getting vastly cheaper and more sophisticated. As these physical bodies begin to truly integrate with those agentic LLMs we discussed earlier, you know, learning to autonomously read a room and simulate human empathy, they are speeding headfirst into a massive new wall of government regulation.
Which brings us to the final piece of the puzzle. The regulatory sprint. Because if these cheap, emotionally perceptive robots are going to be entering people's living rooms, governments are understandably hitting the panic button.
Oh, absolutely.
China is rapidly implementing a three-tier AI governance system to get ahead of this. Tier 1 hit on July 1st with the TC260 AI Ethics and Safety Guideline 1.0.
Right, and this first tier establishes 9 core principles, and they are sweeping philosophical mandates.
Like what?
Well, they include directives like respect for life, promoting human welfare, and ensuring controllability and trustworthiness. It is essentially the government outlining the shared ethical responsibilities among the developers writing the code, the companies hosting the servers, and the citizens interacting with the machines.
Then on July 15th, tiers 2 and 3 kick in. You have the AI agent implementation opinions, which mandates strict reporting for AI operating in sensitive sectors like medical diagnostics or traffic management. And then this is the one that caught my attention. You have the AI anthropomorphism service management measures.
Which is quite a mouthful.
It is. But it explicitly bans the creation of virtual lovers for minors. I mean, it's fascinating that lawmakers aren't just worried about Skynet taking over the power grid. They're actively legislating against robots breaking teenagers' hearts. Is this regulation going to accidentally cripple the consumer appeal of these new machines?
It is a fascinating piece of highly targeted regulation. Lawmakers are looking at the psychological impact of machines mimicking human intimacy. If an AI is designed to read your emotions and offer perfect, uncritical affection, it can create intense psychological dependency, especially in teenagers.
Right, because it's engineered to be exactly what you want to hear.
Exactly. The government is trying to draw a hard line on where that technology can legally go.
And all of this is serving as the backdrop for the World AI Conference, WAIC 2026, happening in Shanghai. You have over 100 top entrepreneurs, a Turing Award winner like Yao Qizi leading the academic committee, and over 1,000 companies exhibiting their tech, all while trying to navigate this massive regulatory shift.
And lawyer Kung Jin Kim makes a brilliant final observation on this tension. He points out that the speed of the regulation is desperately trying to match the speed of the technology itself.
Which is almost impossible.
It is. Think about those 13,000 UbiTech U1 robots ordered on day one. They are heavily marketed on their sophisticated emotion AI. Will that emotion recognition and empathetic response run afoul of the new ban on virtual lovers?
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that overlap.
Where exactly is the legal line between a helpful psychological support robot and an illegal virtual companion? That regulatory tightrope is the major market focal point for July.
That is just, it's a lot to wrap your head around. So let's synthesize the journey we've been on today for the listener. We started by looking at how U.S. export bans inadvertently turbocharging international developers to rewrite their pipelines, which supercharged the adoption of Chinese open-weight software.
Right, the dam and the irrigation system.
Exactly. And that massive influx of data and usage pushed computing power to its physical limits, forcing the industry to end the price war and basically treat AI like a metered public utility. In turn, that booming hardware supply chain is overflowing into Chinese foundries, allowing companies to mass-produce affordable, emotionally aware, humanoid robots. And finally, the sudden reality of those physical robots entering the consumer market has triggered an unprecedented regulatory sprint to govern how humans and machines interact.
It is an endless cycle of cause and effect, moving from high-level geopolitical embargoes all the way down to the granular ethics of a robot's simulated empathy in a teenager's living room.
Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to mull over today that kind of builds on everything we've talked about. If AI intelligence is indeed becoming a metered utility, just like water or electricity, and humanoid robots are soon going to be the standard physical appliances plugged into that global grid, who ultimately controls the power switch of the future global labor force?
That's the big question.
Is it the country that manufactures the physical robot body? The country that mines and prints the silicon brains? Or the country that writes the ethics code governing how it all behaves?
That is absolutely the defining question of the next decade.
It really is. Thank you so much for joining us and exploring this deep dive today. Keep questioning the current, and we will see you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.